Throughout the Gospels, Jesus told stories, but not just any old stories. Stories that were powerful, informative, and transformative. These parables were the basis for how he taught and our best insight into how he views the world. Join us this fall for a study in the parables as we look at the moral of the story. And now, here's today's message.
Good morning, friends. It's a pleasure to see you. My name is David, as I think you probably figured out. Good to be back here at Northgate. Always enjoy being here, participating in worship with Anthony and the team. What a lovely church. My wife, Yvonne, is not with me today. If you know us, you know we always travel together. But because of Hurricane Irma, she has stayed in Baltimore with our daughter-in-law and granddaughters who have just evacuated yesterday from Tampa. So I'm sure you will excuse her absence given that reason. And our son he's a pastor in Tampa, and he's the volunteer coordinator at one of the shelters there in Brandon, which has 47 feet of elevation. Woo! But that's a big thing in Tampa right now. 47 feet makes all the difference. So they're with 1,400 people in the Brandon High School, and I know we'll appreciate your prayers. I would also ask you to especially pray for our Haitian congregations along the West Coast, there around Naples and Fort Myers. They are among some of the most economically precarious in the state, and substandard housing a lot of ways, and that appears to be the place that's going to get hit the hardest. So please pray for your sister congregations there along the West Coast. Thank you for that. Yvonne and I were missionaries for 28 years in Latin America. So for most of that time, we didn't have enough money to have to think about financial planning. You know, missionaries, we had just decided we weren't going to focus our lives around finances. So we, thanks to the generosity of God's people, we were fine and all that. But it wasn't, you know, did not have our heads in the financial planning game. But then 10 years ago, we came back to the States, and now I get a regular check, and now I get what's going on, right? So I'm like a 24-year-old. This is going to surprise you, but I'm not 24. I'm actually older than that. But you know, like I'm having to figure out all the financial stuff. So I realized I had to be making provisions for when I do get old. I looked online and I found a retirement calculator. You perhaps have seen these. There are dozens of them. So you go online, you find a retirement calculator because you're trying to figure out what is the number. The number is how much do you need to save for when you retire. Now, if you've hit that mile post or, you know, you're near it, you know what I'm talking about. If you're younger, you're like, whatever. But actually, you might want to be thinking about these kind of things. So, retirement calculator. The problem with a retirement calculator is it is totally useless because it asks you two questions that there's no way you can answer. First, it says, so you go on there, and it says, what's your age? Okay. And then it says, at what age will you die? You're like, I don't know when I'm going to die, you know. Who knows? But it cannot work unless you make up an age. So you've got to put in something, and if you're fairly optimistic, you know, you probably put in an old age, like 60 or something like that, right? So you got a guess there. You make a guess. And then it asks you the second unanswerable question, which is, how much money will you need per month in retirement? And again, how am I supposed to know how much money I'm going to need in retirement? That's a long way down the road, and who knows what's going to happen if the world's blown up and health care and Social Security, you know. So again, you make up another number. Now you've got two fictitious numbers. And the calculator goes to work, and then it tells you the number. Here is what you need to save by retirement. It's going to be something like $3 million. And you're going to say, okay, I have $1,300 saved up. How do I get from 1,300 to 3 million, you know? Our retirement calculators. Gotta love them. Actually, it's a good process to go through. I would recommend it. Good to think through these things. Here's the good news. Jesus actually has a retirement calculator too. He has very good advice, which is not based on fictitious numbers. And here's the way, here's the kind of the preface to his retirement calculator and the afterword to his retirement calculator, which we're going to be in Luke chapter 12. We're talking about parables beginning today and for the next several weeks. We're going to be talking about parables. In Luke chapter 12, go ahead and turn your Bible on or open it or however you get to it, to Luke chapter 12. Because in here, he has this preface and this afterword to the parable. And both before and after he talks about your retirement calculator, he says this, don't worry. Isn't that kind of nice? You know, don't be anxious about this. That doesn't mean you shouldn't pay attention to it. And you'll see he talks about being reasonable later on. But we should not be anxious about it. The reason there are so many retirement calculators online is because those who live around us who do not have this faith walk with God are very anxious about their future. But we Christians are different, aren't we? We live by different rules. We play by, we have a different standard for what success looks like. And we have a different end line in terms of how important death is to us or not. So he couches this. And I want you to keep this in mind. Don't worry. Don't be anxious. You have a Father who sees you. I'm not going to have us look at the whole of the 12th chapter because it's too long. But I am going to jump in here with you right about verse 13. And I need you to have an understanding of how this fits in the Gospel of Luke. Luke, the physician, is recording the story of Jesus. He begins in chapter 9 talking about a road trip that Jesus takes. And from chapters 9 through 19, it is the story of this road trip. Jesus is on this extended journey. Imagine, if you will, just for a moment, the map of Israel where Jesus is living. He begins life, well, of course, he's born in Bethlehem, but he's raised up north, up in Nazareth. So imagine the northern part. That's where the Sea of Galilee is. That's Galilee up north. And then he's taking a trip from the north, about 75 miles south, following the Jordan River south, down to the Dead Sea, turn right, over to Jerusalem. So it's about 75 miles. This is a trip which would have just taken a few days if he were in a hurry, but he's not in a hurry. This is chapters 9 through 19. This is a big section of the gospel as Luke records it. And he is on a slow trip. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey for him. He's visiting village after village. And every place he goes, he's teaching about the kingdom of God and how the reality when God is in our life is different than before. So Christians, the followers of Christ, the followers of Jesus, we handle money differently than those who are not believers. Or at least we should. We have a whole different set of parameters around finances. So we're an odd lot, I guess you'd say, when it comes to finances. So he's going from village to village. He's teaching, and a part of his teaching, one of his teaching methods, are these parables, right? You can see that there, the study of the parables. He would use these stories that we call parables. We call them parables because they have a point to the story, kind of like a moral. There's a point to the story. It's not just a random, hey, guess what happened? A parable is a teaching a teaching event. It's a way to get across a truth. And parables usually just have one central truth they're trying to get across, and we'll see what this one is today. But the next several weeks, we're going to be, not me, because I won't be here, but you will be looking at a number of parables. Really a fascinating didactic device, right? A fascinating way to teach, to use these parables. One of the reasons he used parables, we think, was to not give his enemies ammunition. So you can tell a story and really let people come to the conclusion. Another reason, though, he told stories was because stories lodge in our brain. They're like Velcro. They have hooks and loops, and they lodge in our brain. So Jesus told these parables. He's going from village to village. He has this crowd of people around him because he has power in his hands, in his being. He heals people. Well, in that day and age especially, to be able to heal, I mean, where else are you going to go? There's a healing prophet. So folks would bring out the sick. They'd bring out those who were struggling with demonic powers in their lives. They would bring him to Jesus. He would make them better. And then he was telling these interesting stories. He was a fascinating speaker. So there's a crowd of people around him. And as we begin getting into this parable, there's a man in the crowd who calls out. The man in the crowd calls out and he says, "Teacher," rabbi it would have been, "teacher, will you tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me?" Now, for this to make any sense, you need to know that in that day, in that culture, the firstborn son got a double share of the inheritance. The women got nothing. It was a patrilinear. So things went in the line of the male line. The inheritance went in the male line. And the oldest son got a double portion of the inheritance. So let me give you an example. So I'm the oldest of three. There are three boys in our family, and my sister is deceased. So there are three of us, right? But really, there would be four shares, and I would get two of them. So my brothers would each get 25% of the inheritance, and I'd get 50%, which seems fair to me. I'm not picking up what the problem is, right? But my younger brothers would pick up what the problem is. Why does he get twice, right? What's up with that? That's not fair. So that's what's happening. So a guy calls out, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." By the way, when you get to the prodigal son, that'll be part of that story too. Jesus turns and he does not fix it. He often takes these kind of opportunities, and he takes them as a teachable moment. Okay, so the subject has come up of finances. And Jesus says, "Man," he's talking to the guy, "man, who made me a judge over you? I'm not the arbiter of this kind of matter." And then he says, "But watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, because a person's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." So that's his response, right? First thing, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Now, greed is, it's the same word that is often translated covet. You know, "thou shalt not covet." It's that same kind of word. And it's where you want something that's not yours, and you want it enough to try to take it. It's the selfish impulse. So imagine a two-year-old. Two-year-olds are selfish. And guess what? So are we. You know, so we want stuff. And this is a very human, normal, I mean, everybody, if you don't have a greedy bone, well, good for you. But most of us do. You know, we want more stuff. And so Jesus is addressing this head on. He says, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed." Now, you know, I get this. I want stuff. I like new stuff, cool stuff. I've got a car I really don't like. Can I get a witness there? Anybody have a car you really don't like? So I have we're a one-car family. Just the two of us, my wife and I. We only need one car, so we got one car. Oh, we're stuck with a 2004 Honda Accord, and it's the most boring color they ever made. It's bronze. You know, I saw one in the parking lot, so you have my sympathy, whoever that is. You know, don't look, just laugh and look around like it's not your car. Somebody else has that loser car. So I don't like my car. I've had it for 10 years. I really would like something snazzier, something spiffier, you know, and sometimes I think, okay, so I'm a bishop. Shouldn't I really, for the good of the church, I think I should have a better car. Okay, that, friends, is greed. I don't need a better car. It works fine. That's why I'm stuck with it. It just won't quit. It keeps going and going. I pray sometimes. I mean, I shouldn't, I know, but I pray for like a tree to fall on it or something. That's the only way I'm going to get rid of this thing and get a cool car. So I get the greed thing. And you know, greed doesn't have to be vicious, because that's not vicious. I'm not trying to steal something from somebody, but it is a dissatisfaction, isn't it? It is a discontent, isn't it? It is kind of a dreaming about the next biggest, coolest, brightest, fastest, strongest. I get that. Jesus says, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. And then there is this summing up statement, because a person's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. That is, it's not the one with the most toys who wins. You know, that's be another way to say it. It's not the one who has the coolest casket who won. Do you do this? Do you go to funerals and you're like, wow, that's really good. Or wow, they kind of chintzed out on that one, you know. And, what? But we are very oriented, especially in our culture, we're very oriented to thinking in materialistic ways. And Jesus is saying, it's not about the stuff. That's what it means. A person's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. It's not about the stuff. And yet, if we're honest, this is how most of us have arranged our lives, about the stuff. I want a boat. I think that would be so great to have a boat. I live near the Chesapeake Bay. Wouldn't that be great? You know, I would like to, you get it. You live in my world, right? I mean, I'm not the only one here. Okay, good. There are two of us who struggle with this. And then comes the parable. So he's responded to the guy who says, teacher, now comes the parable. Jesus is going to give this teaching time. So he says, the ground of a rich man produced an abundant harvest. The earth, the land, right? The ground of a rich man produced an abundant harvest. The rich man thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to put it all. I know what I'll do. I will tear down my barns, and I will build bigger barns, and I will be able to store all my surplus grain in the bigger barn. Then I will say to myself, self, I'll say, you have enough stored up for many years. Take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said, you fool. This very night, your life will be required of you. And then who will get all that you have stored up for yourself? And this is how it will be for anyone who stores up for themselves but is not rich toward God. So that's the parable. And that closing expression is the moral of the story. Let me read it to you exactly, because I was paraphrasing. He said, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God. That's the moral. Rich toward God. Am I rich toward God? That's a kind of an awkward phrase, isn't it? Rich toward God. I mean, what does that mean? Rich. What would it mean if I said I were rich toward you? I suppose it would mean I gave you some belongings or some riches, I guess. You know, that must be the general idea. And in fact, doesn't Jesus help us understand what it means? Because he sets these two things up in opposition. He says, that will be how it will be for anyone who stores up things for themselves and is not rich toward God. So those things are in opposition. So for whom are we storing things up, for ourselves or for him? This is the idea of the kingdom. Now, you know, we live in a republic. We don't live in a kingdom, but we understand the concept, right? So it's like there are two worlds. There's the physical world, and there is the eternal, really spiritual world, and these are kingdoms. God is the kingdom of this one, and we are the kingdom of this one. And the question is, we have money, we have stuff, and where are our riches? Are they here or are they there? Well, let's back up and look at the parable just a little bit. First, it starts off and it says, the ground of a rich man yielded a great harvest. So note that the man is rich before it starts. The judgment here, when God says, you fool, it's not about being rich. He was okay. He was rich. The judgment is about what he does when he gets to that point where it crosses the line between what he needs and now it's just extra. And all he can think about is himself. The reason I point that out is no one should go home feeling guilty about, like, this was about not being wealthy. It's not that. It's about what do we do with what we have. The ground of a certain rich man. So he was rich to start with, and I would point out that it doesn't say the rich man, by dint of hard work, had a great harvest. It says it was the ground produced it. The reason this is good for us to know, especially in our culture, in the U.S., you know, we need to remember what we have is not totally due to our own hard work and our own genius. We are born into a particularly fortunate place. I travel broadly around the world, and I find brilliant people everywhere. I find hardworking people everywhere. But some people are living in countries which are poorly run, which are corrupt. You know, so if I were born in South Sudan, Africa, that would have made all the difference. And it would be my dream to someday own a 2004 Honda Accord. And because of where I'm born, for me, it's like just a boring thing. So let's remember, the ground produced it. Let's remember, this is not ours. The stuff we're handling is not ours. We should perhaps think of ourselves more as investment brokers for God's stuff than as owners. I think we take entirely too much ownership of, and this is one of the teachings of this, we take too much ownership of the stuff. So he says the ground produces it, the rich man, you know, he's rich before that. And then his error is in thinking, okay, so now I've got this, all this extra grain, what am I going to do with it? I'm going to build a bigger closet. Now, I don't have a barn. Some of you do. Most of us don't, but we all have closets. So think about the closet you have. Do you need a bigger closet? And that may help us kind of get our heads around this. Like, it's more about, think more about closets than barns. And the guy says, I need a bigger closet. I need a bigger storage space. And then, of course, God says to him, you fool. Now, the reason the word fool is important is, first place, it's you do not want God calling you a fool. That's not going to be good, right? But the word fool here means you who have not thought about this, you who have not been reasonable, you who have not reflected on this, you fool, you should have paid attention to the stuff. You should manage your stuff in a way that it isn't just for you, but that it is rich toward God. You don't want God to call you a fool. I don't want him to call me a fool. So I need to be thinking about this retirement calculator, this financial planning, which isn't just about me and my kingdom, but is about the kingdom of God. Now, the reason I like that word reasonable is this is, I'm not some kind of John the Baptist here in a camel's clothing and eating locusts saying, give up all your money and go live in a hut. I'm not saying that. The judgment is not against rich people. It's against not understanding, not thinking, not being reasonable, and not differentiating between our temporary little kingdoms and the one that goes on and on and on. So the error most of us make in our retirement calculators is that we are only thinking about taking care of stuff until we die. You will not, I can guarantee you, you will not find a retirement calculator online that says, are you investing for after you're dead? They just don't think that way. We Christians do. And that's what Jesus is saying. Think about the kingdom that goes on and on. Because here's the good news. You're going to live a long time after you're dead. Invest in that kingdom. So this is the way Jesus wraps it up. I don't have time to go into all of the, you know, all of the ins and outs of it. But at the end of the parable, which is in verse 23, then Jesus turns to the disciples. So he's been talking to the crowd. Now he talks to the disciples. And from 22 down to 34, he really begins to unpack it for them. What does it mean? And again, he says, don't worry. Don't be anxious. He goes to the ravens. He goes to the flowers. He says, God's going to take care of you. But you need to take care of the others who are around us. He talks about giving to the poor. And he says, because in this way, we are participating in that kingdom. In this way, you actually are taking care of yourself later on. He says, in this way, you are providing. Look what he gets to down there in verse 32. Don't be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. So sell your possessions and give to the poor. Although I will say, this is not the same thing he said to the rich young ruler where he said, sell all your possessions. This is just sell your possessions. It does not imply all, but it does say, and give them to the poor. It really is give alms. By the way, this is beyond tithing. We all understand tithing, right? This is, tithing is kind of the baseline of giving. We're talking about above and beyond that. This is our heart matter. And sell your possessions, give to the poor. Provide, now here is the otherworldly talk. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out. He's talking about after death. There is a relationship between how we live here, how we are rich toward God, and our future and eternal reward. This is something we don't talk a lot about in the church, but there are rewards in heaven. Remember this phrase? For great is their reward in heaven. Most of us just think about, well, I just want to go to heaven. Yeah, but it's more than that. There is a reward there. So he says, will not wear out, a treasure in heaven, Jesus saying, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted. See, you don't want to run out in heaven. I mean, I'm speaking a little facetiously. You're not going to run out, don't worry. But there is a reward in heaven. You will be rewarded. Where no thief comes near, no moth destroys. And then the final line, which most of us could repeat by memory, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Where our treasure is, there will our heart be also. So the right question is not, how long am I going to live? Don't worry, don't be anxious, little flock. The right question is not, how much money do I need month by month? Don't worry, don't be anxious, little flock. The right question is not, how am I going to survive? Don't be anxious, little flock. The right question is, where is your treasure? That's where Jesus lands it. The whole parable, as he explains it, lands there. Where is our treasure? Let's pray.
Thanks for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk with Jesus Christ. For more resources, visit our website at northgatefmc.com or download the Northgate app. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.